last time.
Who's bad to the kiddie in the jacko hat? To the kiddie in a Rooney shirt dragging back the curtains in the room in her daddy's flat. A young girl heard the truth and an alley cat howling on the roof next door. Imagine that all your idols were just like you. Nothing's beyond you, do what you want to do if you feel that it wants you to. Look, true never meant nothing more than it means right now when everything's fake. But you and your deepest reaches keeping secrets know what it takes to make a meaning mean something. I'm moving through a space that some can't see. I know this space exists, so do you if your heart beats in the oldest groove. Life is huge, but we have shrunk it, we've made it small. We used to walk tall, but who cares, right? We're having a ball. Yeah. Them things you don't show, I can see. Them things you don't say, you speak to me. Them things you hide ain't hiding, no firm ground, but we ain't sliding. Them things don't haunt you, let them be. That thing you weep for, leave. All life is forward, you will see. It needs you to lead it.
Go ahead, keep it in till it rivers you. Move fast, don't stop, you've got things to do. Tell yourself, ask them, man, it isn't you. Nod your head and believe that until it's true. You can tell it not to show its face when you are trying to hold your space. But it's in you, deep in your sinews, and it comes out on the coldest days. See the kid with the memory he can't shake. See the man with the lover on his mind. See the lady with the guilt and the heartache. See the woman trying to battle with time. See the man with the blood on his hands. See the girl with her hands on her hips. Everybody say nothing, stay bland. If you don't show it, then it don't exist.
Them things you don't show, I can see. Them things you don't say, speak to me. Them things you hide ain't hiding. No firm ground, but we ain't sliding. Them things don't haunt you, let them be. That thing you weep for, leave. All life is forward, you will see. It's yours when you're ready to receive it.
You're so focused on finding the differences, you ignore.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time here on Six Music. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments that made them who they are today. This week, we're joined by a rapper, poet, novelist and playwright whose sharp lyrics, brilliant storytelling, vividly drawn characters and passionate delivery shine through no matter what medium they choose to work in. I'm very pleased to say my guest on The First Time this week is Kay Tempest.
Them things you don't show, I can see. Them things you don't say, speak to me. Them things you hide ain't hiding. No firm ground, but we ain't sliding. Them things will haunt you, let them be. That thing you weep for, leave. All life is forward, you will see. It's yours when you're ready to receive it.
You just heard The Beigeness from their 2014 album Everybody Down, and over the next hour we'll talk about how Kay's love of hip-hop, impromptu sets in record shops and a close creative partnership with producer Dan Carey all led to that debut LP. We'll also discuss Kay's relationship with their work and the attention that it attracts, and also a rather brilliant story about Rick Rubin and Frank Ocean venturing to a tiny club in South London just to watch them perform. But I started off by asking, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time they were aware of music?
I don't remember like an epiphany moment. It was just always a part of life, I think. I think it's before I can remember, because right. It's always been a part of my life, I think. I wish I could tell you, oh, it was this really specific moment, but it's just, I think it's always been very important, I think, in my life and to me and, you know, around me.
So what sort of thing was, when you were very young, was kind of surrounding you? What kind of music was being played?
I'm the youngest of five and grew up with both my folks at home, so I had everybody's music was around me all the time. So my mum, she was into like Tina Turner and like Joni Mitchell and kind of folky, like 60s stuff, I suppose. Like my brother was into like grungy music and then later kind of speed garage and things like that. My sisters were into like kind of more rocky music. My other sister was into more soul-y music, like Mariah Carey and things like that. And my dad was into like quite lyrical music, quite he was really into Bob Dylan. He liked jazz as well. He liked, you know, it was just lots of different people listening to their music whenever they could get their music on, you know. So
arguing about who's going to put something on the stereo time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then my two of my sisters lived in Wales, and so we would obviously go and get them, and so there was lots of long car journeys.
Oh,
so
right.
Me and my other sister would be in the boot and the siblings would be in the back, and so then there was always like tapes that we got, I suppose, from like service stations. I remember there was this the best 60s album in the world ever, like cassette. So, and I used to love that. I used to love that album. It was like The Zombies and
yeah,
Nobody Told Me About, like that.
That's a brilliant tune. That's a brilliant
tune. It's an absolute, yeah. So anytime I hear any music from like the 60s, it makes me feel like immediately taken back to just staring out the back of the car window, you know?
Yeah, with nothing to do, no phones to play on, just looking out the window for just hours.
Like trying to get a wave off someone.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked, the way she had turned the color of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright, but she's not there.
What about the first bit of music that you owned, the first kind of CD or the first record that was yours, that didn't have any connection to the rest of the family?
Yeah, I was really into this group called Ultimate Chaos that were like...
hang on, with a K? Chaos.
With a K, yeah.
Yeah, I remember them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were like, I was kind of sweet on them. And I mean, I've actually talked about this before, but it's like totally humiliating, but I had the cassette, the single of like the Zig and Zag song. That was they had this like ragga tune that they released. These like breakfast TV puppets, and like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. I was in Woolworths, I bought it. I know, like, I could have said something more credible, but that is the truth. I think that that is what I bought.
Yeah, I love me. Yeah, I love me.
Live music. Did you go to many gigs and stuff when you were young?
I mean, not young. The first gigs that I went to, I went off my own back. I didn't go with the family. We didn't go to gigs, I don't think. When I first started going out to see stuff, I mean, it was just amazing. Growing up in London, in South London, there was just so much about. There was so much to see. So I think from about the age of 13, I started to go out and seek out live music. I was really into hip hop and rappers, so there was a lot of that going on. Like, whether that was just big artists or just like a night, you know, just a night in Brixton or something like that, where there would be rappers that were just local. But also, like, I saw Billy Cobham at the Vortex once.
And what?
Yeah, it was amazing. The old Vortex before it is what it is now. Saw like there was this thing called a Central Festival that happened, and it was like I saw like J-Roo the Damager, I saw Biz Markie, like this is at like 14 years old, Gangstar, Tribe, like, you know, it was, I don't know, it was just this mad time, like, where everything was possible. You know, you're just getting into music and you're so desperate. You could be, the thing was, is that I often used to go to places where I wasn't allowed in, and I would rap and freestyle to the bouncers and just persuade them that you know, it was okay to let me in, even though I was underage. Sometimes I had a ticket, sometimes I didn't have a ticket, and I would just stay there for long enough to befriend them. And then I got into a Mos Def show that way, got into a Pheromone show that way, I got into a DJ Premier show that way. And it was just like this kind of feeling at the time, which was that anything was possible, and if you loved it enough, then it was there for you, you could find it, kind of thing.
We'll be right back. mentioned Tribe there. Find a Way is a song that you've chosen. What is it about Tribe Called Quest that's has it fit into your worldview then?
I think probably the same as every other person my age and probably a bit older and a bit younger. They were just huge. They were just part of the musical horizon. Obviously, I love the beats. I love the music. But specifically, personally, I was listening to the lyrics and I just loved like the storytelling. Like, I loved the way that Tip and Fife were just... would often play off each other's lyrics, and also it was just beautiful music. It was just, for me, it was the kind of most, it was the most gentle music that I was really, really into at that time. And I just, it was always the right time to listen to it. There was never a time when you couldn't put it on and just be into whatever it was you were doing with that on with you. I must have just absolutely rinsed it for about 5 years straight, probably listened every day to Tribe. So
messing me up my whole head, teasing me just like Tita did Martin. Now look at what you starting. Schoolboy crushing it, ain't on the hush, the whole world see it, but you can't. My peoples, they complain, sit and rave and rant.
Come on.
Your name is out my mouth like an ancient chant. Got me like a dog as a paws and pant.
Speaking of which, got a leash and a wish just to rock you, miss. Make a militant move, beat my strategy.
What?
End of the day, you're not mad at me. Not dealing with nobody, now that's what you told me.
What?
I said, hey, yo, it's cool, we can just be friendly. Cause yo, picture me messing it up. Her mind not corrupt with the LC cups.
Huh?
I'm on my J-O.
Come on.
Bullish and hoping that the day goes slow.
What?
Got me like a friend, what confuses me though? It's kisses when we breathe, tell me what's the deal, yo. Now you caught my heart for the evening. Kiss my cheek, move then, you confuse things. Should I just sit out or come harder? Help me find my way. Now you caught my heart for the evening. Kiss my cheek, move then, you confuse things. Should I just sit out or come harder? Help me find my way.
Now why you wanna go and do that, love, huh? Making things for me towards you harder.
When was the first you've got your foot on a stage? All of a sudden you're kind of, you're performing to a group of people specifically who've come to see you. When was that?
Oh, who've specifically come to see me?
Yeah. Or you were part of a night where there was things happening, but it's you are on the bill.
Well, the thing is, I used to quite often perform like not on the bill. Like, the first time I got up with my own thing to do was at a record store, but people hadn't come to see me. It was like a kind of open mic thing, and it was my time. That was the first time I ever rapped in front of people.
What do you remember from that? Do you remember it feeling? I mean, if you've been doing it that much, it just becomes another show, doesn't it? But like, there's
no. Back then was the first time. The first time I ever rapped in front of people was at Deal Real Records in Carnaby Street.
Right.
Like, I mean, apart from my friends, the first time I actually rapped to strangers, it was a record store in town, and they had every Friday night it would just get packed out, full of people that would come. I'm sure listeners will remember if they've ever been there. It was just such an incredible experience. It just, the shop got packed out, all the way out onto the street would be packed. And then like amazing rappers would come through. If they had shows in town, they would come through, you know, like Ghostface Killah was there, like Mos Def was there, like people would come and rhyme, and it was just incredible. And they would have this like open mic section of the event every Friday night, and I just kind of got pushed to the front, kind of made my way to the front. I was there with a friend, Budgie, who was really helping me out, and kind of found my way to the front and just looked out, and I just remember feeling terrified. There was kind of no going back. I had like elation, but also real tunnel vision, like absolutely clear, like down to the molecular level. Everything was
right.
so clear. And then I was like terrified, like kind of nervous, sick, hot. And then as soon as I took the microphone in my hand, as soon as it was my time, everything went into the words, like everything, the whole room disappeared, and I just like went into the words. And then I kind of came out the other end, and it was just the most intense rush of like adrenaline and love and satisfaction and like embarrassment and yeah.
And this is something I have to keep doing, I guess, as well, that feeling.
Yeah, for sure. That was it, and it was, there was nothing else. Everything else disappeared.
Let's choose another track. Oh no.
Fur and Munch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell me about why that song means so much to you.
Just because, like, it's so hard to choose songs that you could to like distill a whole lifetime of listening to so much music into like a song. But what I love about that.
Sorry about that.
No, no, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to try and do. But you know, like, I just had to relax about it and try and be like, okay, whatever. Just the first songs that come to mind. So, Pharoah and Mos and Nate Dogg on this song together. I remember when it came out, and I was really into Raucous Records, and I just loved everything they were putting out. And the thing is about Nate Dogg is every single song that Nate Dogg was ever on, it was like he was like the anchor of the track and the kind of decoration at the top. He could be both, like, you know, he was both the roots of the tree and the angel on the top of the Christmas tree, right? And I just loved him. I loved the melodies. And then Pharoah was my favorite rapper. Mos Def was my favorite rapper. Like, these people were real teachers to me, and so I just thought I'd choose this song because it's beautiful, it's fun, it's a brilliant song, but also it contains three of this, for me, the greatest talents that hip hop kind of produced at that time. So, you know, a chance to talk about that.
Yeah. One for the trouble, two for the bass. Welcome to the great incredible paper chase. Keep your boots laced if you wanna keep pace.
Oh no, they scared to hustle. It's been 7 days, the same clothes. Ask them originals, cause they know. All step, Nate Dogg, Pharoah. Step away from the mic, they too cold. The funk might fracture your nose.
My name, say my name. Observe how I stake my claim. I independently lay down and paid my game. My own two raise my flame, cause ride and ain't my thing. I earned what they said I wouldn't. I got it the way they said I couldn't. But now I'm getting it and they whole grill is crooked. Mad cause I'm getting caked out for my bookings. Well, y'all was asking permission, I just stepped up and took it. What? The kids better buy my rookie card now. Cause after this year, the price ain't coming down. And if you got a joint bubbling, then get money now. Cause in a minute, it's gonna be some real trouble coming out. Just a warning, as usual, some cats won't heed it. The hard-headed always gotta feel it to believe it. Shame the jealous gaze is too short to see it. But when they face it to seem it, they nod in agreement. We can play nice and decent, or dirty like the 7-1 precinct. Call it a day and make it a long evening. You keep on scheming and give me some more reason. I had them women in your mama's church screaming, Lord Jesus. Harder than y'all, cause I'm smarter than y'all. I know the deep down it got to be bothering y'all. Pay attention, watch flock go get larger than y'all. Pour your pride on the rocks and make it swallow it all.
Oh no! Look at who they let in the back door. From Long Beach to Brooklyn, they know. We rock from the east to west.
What about the first musical release? What was the first thing that you were on that was kind of that people could get in shops?
My first release was with Sound of Rum. We made an album called Balance.
Yeah.
And that came out on Sunday Best, which was Rob the Banks record label.
Yeah.
That was my first proper. That was it. I thought that was going to be it. Like,
what, in terms of like, that's it, I'm going to break through now.
That's
the
it.
The audiences are going to go huge.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Made it. Or the gates are going to open. I'm going to walk into the palace of the music industry and adoring fans. But, you know, I mean, it was a beautiful experience making that record. And it's definitely something I'm proud of, but it's what I imagined might happen at the point of finally achieving the record deal and the music, and, you know, the fantasy of it was very different from actually what happens when you put a record out.
Yeah, but I guess that's, I mean, that experience teaches you a lot, and you bring that forward to everything else, how you think about everything else afterwards. It's kind of good to get for it not to go according to plan, I guess.
It's perfect. I am so grateful for every single step of this journey. It's absolutely been as it should have been, because here we are.
Yeah.
We are the products of our times, our legacy, our messiness, our misdirected energies, our self-obsessive tendencies. I waste no more time, wondering what can never be. Friendship's numb to nothing now, I hope that you remember me in kindness or with empathy at least, like I remember you. Know that I am who I am for having been a friend to you. I know now firsthand, regretting all will empty you of all that makes you loving and all that lovers pay attention to. Been here before entangled, trying not to mention you. My blood and guts just filled to bursting with a stench of you. I lose me in nothing, I do things I never meant to do. All my weakness is my weakness, and an attempt to strengthen you. Last night, just like all other nights, I fell asleep and dreamt of you. But you is not my person, not a version of a person, or a device listed in my rhymes to help me vent some more emotion. You is all the use I ever loved in falsity, all the use I fell for in the darkness of this false city. All the use you have my truth and in return were false to me. All the use I had to lose so I can make the most of me. All the use your secrets I still keep it while I ghost to me, haunting me every time I let someone get close to me. All the use I love beside these crashing lights are supposed to me. Naked came, naked left, squandered all my hope to me. Resuscitate the violence.
12 Brand New Ancients. That was kind of got such attention and got such acclaim. Looking back, how do you feel about that kind of piece of work now you've got enough sort of distance from it? Because it was rapturously received, or however the critics want to put it.
Yeah, it was really important. It was an important piece of work for me to create in the first place, you know, to have thought of it, to have finished it, to have made it, and then to have achieved the performance of it in the way that I did at the time. It was a beast to perform. And it was just a remarkable journey. I went to New York with it, and I went on this TV show, the Charlie Rose TV show, did an interview, which was how Rick Rubin ever heard about me. So that piece of work is also linked to my relationship with Rick Rubin, and then what's happened since. And it's linked to me understanding loads about theatre and how the theatre works, how writing for theatre works. And it linked me up with beautiful players of music, cellists, tuba players, you know, like, it was a magical time. And I feel like, yeah, it's weird. You said it was 2012, so that's 10 years ago now. So, but I feel about it the way that probably lots of people feel about events, important events that happen in their life, which is like, you know, you... these things that you kind of pin your narrative around, but you don't have much close contact with. It's just these landmarks that you can look back and say, well, I did that then, so, you know, but it doesn't really have a tangible presence in my life anymore.
But it's part of you, of course it is.
Yeah, yeah, it's a landmark. It's a landmark. It's like, what? When I think about it. But one day it might have another life, but not for me. Maybe there's another life for it, but I don't know what.
Tell me about your first impressions of Dan Carey, because obviously this is someone that you've got this brilliant, wonderful relationship with, and you've talked a lot about how working with him is the right place for you to be working in many, many ways. But what were your first impressions of him?
Rob DeBank, who ran Sunday Best Records, brought Dan to one of the Sound of Rum gigs, and we were playing in a pub whose name I forget. It was this pub in Camden, I think, and there wasn't really anybody in the room. There was, like, you know, we gave it our all every single time. We gave it our absolute all, but I think there was probably three people in the room, and the fourth was Dan Carey. And just looking, I just remembered this, like, these eyes, this deep focus, this like almost kind of rattling presence of mind that I hadn't really come across before. And when we met after the show, I was almost kind of freaked out by Dan, because I didn't know him yet. I didn't know how to take him, and the way that he listens so intensely, and he looks so deeply at you when he's looking at you, that it takes a few times of meeting him before you realize that this is just who he is. It's right. And you learn to take him on his own terms. But at first, I was stunned by him, and I wanted to know him, and I wanted to get in his studio, but also I didn't really have any idea how amazing and how close and how fruitful our relationship was about to become. He was just this guy, you know, that was like really intense, and I wanted to know him more, but I didn't understand at the time of meeting him. Like, yeah,
people talk about him like they don't talk about other producers. It's really lovely that people so enjoy the experience. And I know that you've spoken about, like, his studio it's a creative safe space for me to be totally myself, and that's so important to you. People love the dude.
Yeah, he's an incredible human being, I can say that, like, really. He which is a huge achievement for a music producer, to be so grounded, like, so to still enjoy so much meeting other people's creativity and meeting his own. And he's so endlessly surprised by what we create and what he's looking for. He's constantly thinking in really off the wall ways, and it's beautiful to be around his mind. Like, you know, he's a physicist as well, so, and he's super smart and also extremely gentle in his nature, and he loves, like, having fun, like having a good, like, you know, switching focus and just like having fun, getting it off your kind of brain and then coming back to it. He can find new avenues to new solutions, you know. He's a real master, I think, Dan. Yeah. Well, will it be this way forever? These are lonely days. What if she can be the one that makes it better? He looks away, can't hold her gaze.
relations. Great, let's see if Primark has space for a placement. Becky clears up from the lunch rush, crushed by the blank eyes. Impolite customers frosting their damp fives into a palm. She thinks there ain't no harm in being civil though, is there? He folds up his job form, gets up from his chair. The next person sits down with a similar air of dejection. He walks out, heads in the direction of the cafe on the corner for a coffee and some headroom. And this guy comes in, the first customer to close the door behind him. For that alone she likes him. He sits at the table by the window, reading, half smiling. His hair's messy and his eyes are shining. Can't think what to say, he just stares blankly. Picks up his change, fiddles with his spoon. And as he leaves the cafe, he's consumed with force of her, wishing that he got up the guts to try and talk to her. Will it be this way forever?
Nirvana, All Apologies.
Yeah.
Is on your list. Yeah. Tell me about first falling in love with Nirvana or that song. What is it about it?
Well, so when I was little, because I had big brothers and sisters, Nirvana, they used to listen to Nirvana, and so like I kind of knew about Nirvana. Is it by proxy? Is that what you meant to say? Like I kind of, I understood that there was Nirvana and that it was cool because my brother thought it was cool and my sisters thought it was cool, but I didn't discover it on my own terms until like I suppose I was just kind of took their CD.
Right.
Out of their room and took it into my own space and then checked it out for myself, and suddenly it was like, whoa, like what are these lyrics? Like what is he saying? Like, and I really, really fell that in utero, whatever people say, like I fell hard for that album, you know. It was like lyrically just everything about it, the way it was presented, like how I could hear that it was three people in a room, or that's how I took it anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't recorded that way, but I really...
Yeah, it was.
I really felt like it was real. It was really happening. And a lot of the music I was listening to is kind of sample-based, so it was very different listening experience to be like, wow, this is like start to end. These is real people playing this, you know? Like, and then he's really saying some stuff. Like, he was really... What he did to me, what Kurt did with those lyrics... it was profound. So, you know, I was thinking, like, you know, if you haven't listened to Nirvana for a while, you could play any song and be like, oh, it's my favourite Nirvana song. But, like, so I could have said any song off that album. But then this one I thought it's a cool one because people love this song. And if you haven't heard it for a while, then it's just a nice reminder of how absolutely incredible that band were.
Nirvana and All Apologies. The choice of my guest here on the first time this week, Kay Tempest. And we'll be back hearing more of Kay's favourite music, including an Outcast classic and an absolute jungle banger, all coming up after the Six Music News.
Six Music. BBC Radio. Six Music.
BBC News at 1:30. This is Andrew Peach. The Conservative Party chairman Oliver Dowden has said the culture in Downing Street needs to be addressed following a series of revelations about gatherings held during lockdowns. He said ultimately Boris Johnson was responsible for the culture but insisted the Prime Minister shouldn't resign. There's been speculation that a number of Tory MPs have requested a vote of no confidence in Mr Johnson. A Conservative MP and former minister Mark Garnier says he's rapidly losing authority.
If you look back on what happened with Theresa May, power doesn't disappear with a vote of no confidence. Power ebbs away gently. People stop listening to the Prime Minister. They start looking to the next people. And actually, eventually, the Prime Minister just can't control the party, and the party is no longer listening to them. And at that point, whoever's in power has to go away. We're not there yet. We're sort of on a bit of a glide slope towards that.
The Labour leader, Sir Keir Starmer, has said he believes Mr Johnson broke the law and lied about industrial-scale partying. He urged the Prime Minister to resign. The Culture Secretary, Nadine Dorries, has indicated that the BBC licence fee is to be frozen for 2 years. She tweeted a link to a Mail on Sunday article saying the decision had been made, but didn't confirm it. Ms Dorries also said the next announcement on the licence fee would be the last, signalling the government's intention to alter the way the BBC is funded. Our media and arts correspondent David Sillitoe says the corporation has lost a great deal of funding already.
It's about a £1.3 billion cut the BBC's had over the last 12 years. If you factor in this freeze for the next 2 years, Ender's analysis, who did an examination of this, said it looked like by the end of 2027 it'll essentially be £480 million less each year the BBC has got. So these are very significant cuts.
There are reports a man who took four people hostage in a Texan synagogue for more than 10 hours was British. The man's now dead, the hostages have been freed, and the Foreign Office says it's in contact with local police. Novak Djokovic has been deported from Australia after a court upheld the government's decision to cancel his visa because he hasn't been vaccinated against COVID-19. The tennis star said he was extremely disappointed. Australia and New Zealand have sent surveillance flights to Tonga to assess the damage after an undersea volcanic eruption triggered a tsunami. New Zealand says the reports that the Tongan capital, Nuku'alofa, has been covered in volcanic dust. Katie Greenwood from the Red Cross in the region says communications with Tonga are very difficult.
We are very keen to hear from the low-lying and outer atolls closer to the eruption site. We have not been able to establish that contact. It's very difficult with the ash clouds causing problems with satellite phones. The undersea cable has been damaged.
Cricket Australia have won the fifth and final Ashes test in Hobart. England were chasing a total of 271 to win. They were bowled out on 124 just before the end of day three. More Six Music news at 2:30.
BBC Radio. Six Music.
Welcome back to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, here on Six Music. This is the show where we meet an influential musician and talk about the pivotal musical moments that made them who they are today. And this week I'm talking to rapper, writer, poet and novelist Kay Tempest. You just heard Circles from 2014's Everybody Down, an album which earned Kay huge acclaim, gained a Mercury Prize nomination and led to a whirlwind of press and attention. And focusing in on that attention, I asked Kay whether they enjoyed that aspect of success.
It was just It was incredible. It was an incredible moment. You know, Dan and I made that album in a couple of weeks, like on Dan's kind of downtime, and it was such a huge rush of creativity. I've been waiting so long to get in a studio with somebody like Dan, and I, you know, like I say, I was so ready. I thought I was so ready for the music industry. I really wanted to be on bigger stages, to reach more people. It was my big lifelong dream. But then at the same time as Everybody Down coming out, it just so happened that also a book of poems I'd been working on was, it came out around the same time, and Brand New Ancients was still kind of ongoing, and it was, everything overlapped, like the theatre work, the poetry writing, the music stuff. And so I was essentially like working three careers, which I'd always done, and it was fine when I wasn't that busy in any of them. But like suddenly it's like everything started kicking
off.
I've
got to do all this.
Yeah. And also, not only because I was a debut published poet, I'd published poetry myself before, but this was my first poetry collections published by a you know, Picador, a big publisher. So I was also, it was my debut solo record. It was my debut novel that came shortly after. It was my debut solo theatre show. So it was like all of these debuts which require you to talk to press. And everybody in all of those industries are like, okay, look, when you do your second one of these, the press schedule will be less hardcore, but right now this is the time for you to, like, they call it, they say plant your flags, you've got to go and plant your flags,
right?
And which is uncomfortable language for me, you know. It's like, what do you mean, like, this is that language of domination, and it's a hard it's all this thing about the hard sell, you know. And so then I just found myself, to be honest, I was just exhausted, I think, by the end of all that, because it's miraculous and beautiful to see your dreams being realized, and especially when your dreams are dreams of creativity, because it's the making of the things that is just absolutely, like, without any equal. That feeling of like, I made a thing, I'm proud of it, somebody wants to put it out, somebody believes in it enough, like somebody's bought it, somebody loves it, you know, it's like all that stuff. But then on top of that, yeah, I found just the promo schedules were really hardcore and the touring was hardcore. But, you know, also I think it's fine to say, I have struggled with my mental health. I wasn't very well. So, sometimes I was kind of down. But it's also the most joyous thing in my life, and I'm thankful for it every day. And, you know, how amazing that people want to talk to me about my work. You know, like, how incredible, like, you know.
Smart girl, soft eyes, took in a hard world and saw it. Fast forward, she's moving for money in bars for the tourists. She's moved up to massage, she's happy, she's in charge. Talking to clients, adoring the silence of after the session. Her and the night air, how to be more than the sum of your parts. She knows how they see her, but they don't know half. I never wanted to be anybody other than the person that I am, and the things that I discovered in the circles that I ran have been difficult and humbling. Some don't understand, but I'm happiest when struggling. She's not reluctant to touch, it's the one thing that must bring us closer together. It's such an important endeavor to feel tender. She can't believe there are some who have never been held in their lives. 8 months in a boardroom, three on the motorway, one in a small room, watching the dawn loom large over grey bricks. It's not sordid, it's sacred to open them up to the warmth of her nature. It's ancient, she don't wanna do it forever, but let's face it, wages are f***ed and rent is outrageous. Some might say that she's being degraded, but she makes her own mind up, knows her own morals. She don't care about how most people see it. One man's certain is another man's squabble. Life's to be lived, not agreed with. She's making her living and she's making it safely. Better than slaving away in an office or killing herself to fill some boss's pockets. Working for peanuts and making them conquerors. I never wanted to be anybody other than the person that I am.
The audiences are getting larger and bigger, and the appetite for what you do has kind of grown. And like those performances, I mean, you know, we're talking about after Everybody Down, sort of going to Let Them Eat Chaos. They're like, they're real. You talked a lot about getting stage fright. I remember we've spoken about it before, and kind of really, well, not stage fright, but like really having to get that first foot up on the stage. But then you go and see you, and there would be a huge kind of commitment on your behalf to all those shows. I just wondered what that takes from you, the impact on your nervous system.
I remember around that time of Everybody Down, Young Fathers, who are also signed to Big Dada, on the same label, and was lucky enough to like hang with them a couple of times, and I absolutely loved that record.
Yeah.
And I remember just talking to, maybe it was G from Young Fathers, about when the stages get bigger, what's amazing, if you've done decade plus of like hard graft to get there, is you remember every single moment when the stages were smaller and there was nobody, there wasn't even a stage quite often. There wasn't really anything there, like,
right,
you know, and if there was something there, there would be a, you know, busted up old bass amp like hissing away through the whole thing, like somebody on the sound that just wishes you hadn't turned up, like, you know, like, and
oh, you want monitors, oh right, right, okay, get you.
And because of all that, then when you do get these big stages that you've kind of hungered for, and you've seen, when you play venues where you've seen artists that you love, when I, so for example, for me, when I played Brixton Academy,
yeah,
it was huge. So yeah, it was a taxing, grueling schedule, like it is, it can be. Also, I didn't know how to do it, I still don't really, but I wasn't experienced enough with you know, big tours like that, so I didn't really know how to pace myself. I just knew that I had to give it every night that way. I had to disappear completely into it, because yeah, that's the nature of what it was that I do. And I was lucky enough to be on tour with some musicians who I've known a long time and played with since I was a teenager, and so it was a journey for us all, like a real galvanizing thing each night of like, come on, we did this, like we came up, like we did this, like unbelievable. And at the same time, it was this kind of mix of like total conviction and complete disbelief. It's like you knew it was going to happen, you knew, you wanted, you dreamed, but at the same time you can't believe it's happening. So yeah, I was knackered out, and for sure my mental health has been fragile, was fragile at the time, but it was some of the most memorable, bizarre, beautiful moments I've ever had.
Indigenous apocalypse, decimated forest, the winter of our discontents upon us. Desolate apostles lurking strong bow at the crossroads. We are nothing but an eating mouth, esophagus colossal. We won't stop until we've beaten down the planet into pellets before the interstellar mission to inflict more terror. It's killing me, it's killing me, it's filling me, I'm vomiting, it's stilling me. Everything is fine, really, silly me. Poor kids shot dead, poor kids locked up, poor kids saying this is the future that you left us. Stocked up lunch meat, processed punch from an unclean fat cat. Tasty, tasty poison, carcinogenic, diabetic, asthmatic, epileptic, post-traumatic, bipolar and disaffected, atomized, thinking we're engaged when we're pacified, staring at the screen so we don't have to see the planet die.
You've got the Let Them Eat Chaos record, which is just, it's a really brilliant encapsulation of everything that you do. I mean, obviously it's a musical, it's an album, but there's also like, as a narrative, like a novel, there's characters, like a play. It's obviously got the poetic way that you write anyway. It seemed like a really perfect sort of illustration of everything that you could do. I remember speaking to you at the time, you were saying you were incredibly proud of that record. It is, it's a great piece of work, that.
Thanks.
I was just, when it came out, when you've clearly put that much into it, and it's, you know, it's very difficult doing records that conceptually have one long thread through them. What were your feelings in the aftermath of completing it?
Oh, I was so happy with it. I was so overjoyed with the whole thing. Everything, the artwork, Peter Kennard's photographs. And I work with Harris Elliott, who's my visual storyteller, you might say. He does my artwork and design. And he introduced me to Peter Kennard's work, and it was just such a, it just felt so complete, you know. It felt,
yeah,
the album felt really complete, the way Dan and I had made it, we were stepping into this new territory together, and everything about it, I was buzzed up for it. Also because I'd taken this time, done all these other things. I think by that point the novel had been out, and oh no, maybe the novel was just about to come out. I'd been constantly working on all these different things, and I just couldn't wait to get back into the mode of music. It was so exciting putting that record out. Yeah,
we came from the four corners, we are the raw waters, the cause, the four horsemen. We'll drink from the water, the pores, we carry the river, the reservoir, the residue, rising waves, sea spray, the inevitable churn and crush. Many voices in our vapors, we surge and gush, we will steam in a distant heat. We move rapid over landscape, gathering speed, desert, land, city, forest and beach, heading for the people asleep, ready to bleed, unleash the torrents, come clean, carry many lessons, let the water teach, but you better learn to swim or you'll get caught beneath.
hard rain falling on all the half-hearted, half-formed, fast-walking, half-fury, half-boredom, hard-talking, half-dead from exhaustion, hard-pushed, but the puddles keep forming, don't fall in. Some saw us in their tea leaves, some felt us in their knees, most left it to the weather.
You mentioned Rick Rubin, and we should talk about Rick. Actually, is it true, or is this, like, just a myth that, because he saw you on tea, and then he brought Frank Ocean to one of your shows? Is that true, or is that just...
Yeah, he brought Frank Ocean to... We played this gig, but we had been speaking. Rick and I had been speaking.
Okay, right.
He phoned me out. We had been in contact, and... I was just taking my time because there were so many things going on. I didn't really have the time to just kind of like duck out, go to Malibu and speak to this incredible producer, because I was in the middle. That's what I'm saying. Like, the touring was so heavy. Everything was so heavy. There wasn't even time for me to like...
There's no time to go to Malibu and see Rick Rubin.
Do you know what I mean?
Man,
it was
that's
like,
busy.
You've got to go to... Like, the things I had to go to were not cool. It was like... I was on like a poetry festival circuit doing like... You know, I'm not even going to say it because it'll sound like I'm cussing. I'm not. I appreciate everything that happened. It was perfect. But the schedule was relentless, I'll say that. Anyway, but the... So Rick Rubin turned up. Everybody Down was just coming out. We did this warm-up show at Corsica Studios, which is like...
Yeah.
In Elephant Castle, it's like a, I don't know, like a 250-capacity venue, pretty like gutter venue in some ways. It's just like nothing flash about it. It's an amazing place to see like electronic music for sure. And you could have a good rave up in there, but it's not very glamorous, shall we say.
No.
And we had a gig in there. And it was like, we were just playing loud, just loving it. It was our first, I think it was our first show. Like, and it was like, at the time I had Georgia, as in Georgia, who's now a fantastic artist, putting records out. Georgia was playing like electronic drums. I think we had two drummers. We had vocalists called Iron Fire doing backing vocals. And like, it was a bit of a chaotic performance. And then found out like later that Rick Rubin had chosen that night to turn up with Frank Ocean, you know, like, of all the nights, you know. Sometimes I could have been like deep in the flow, like transcending, you know, like bringing the whole room into a unified present, but unfortunately Rick and Frank came to see the night where I was squawking my head off in Corsica Studios, like buzzed up because it was my first show. I think Georgia might have even fell off the stage like backwards on that show, so I think I'm pretty sure they didn't stay till the end.
But really, if you want to come to a show, that's the show. That's the real show you want to be in, you know?
I don't know.
No, yeah, no, anyway, what was I saying? Wait, hold on, I'm coming up. Wait, good night, weren't it? Must have been burnt too much on the good stuff, lucky me. I looked up, I saw my future unravel and the light's funny, innit? I love that sinking feeling any minute, but you can't win a race unless you're running in it right. Oh, you can't get a chase unless you're taking a bite. Man, I'm climbing up the walls. Things are getting difficult, it's all take a start early, work late. Putting in the hours for these tokens. Love's a joke when your blood's pulsing. Love is real when you start choking. I'm in the vast ocean. State of me, mate. Blatantly the way I was made, you see? I've been getting on it since back in the day. Good place for a bad time if you ask me. Trust me, nothing gets past me. A bad place for a good time if you know what I mean. Never met no one like you, this feels like a dream. Whoops, back here again. How many times have I sworn it's the end? Whoops, I know this feeling. Shoveling the rubbish and I'm staring at the ceiling. Whoops, dancing to a tune. Hands in the air when it hits you. Whoops, I'm lying in my bed and my brain is eating my head. I've got these demons that I can't shake. My past is a vast place.
Millennium by Outkast.
Yeah.
Why is this on the list, then, Kay?
Outkast were huge for me, still are. I think Andre, I think, you know, is a huge talent for everybody, but I think especially lyricists, the way that a person who loves lyrics will connect with Andre 3000 is, it's like spiritual, you know. Like when I first encountered Outkast, it was the AT Aliens record, and just somebody that I thought was really cool, like this album, and I listened to it and I didn't understand it, but because I thought he was so cool, I gave it more time because I wanted to be like him. And then it took like, I don't know, it took me like a year to really, you know, like a slow burn. Like I stayed with it. I didn't get it and I stayed with it, and suddenly one day it just clicked. And from that day to this, Outkast have just been integral. I think because I worked so hard to try and understand this sound that was coming from such a different place. I'd never really heard hip-hop like that. I'd never really heard instrumentation like that. I'd never heard flows like that. And then this, I just love this song because it's so laid back. It gives this impression of being yeah, just so laid back, but actually it's so intense what he's saying and the presentation of the lyric and how it interacts with the beat. So I just, that's what I love about them. It's like they're using all this kind of, they're like sneaking stuff through all the time, you know. It's like this kind of appearance of one thing and then the reality is completely different, what they're actually giving you. It's so nuanced, it's so layered, and yeah, I love them.
Me and everything around me is unstable like Chernobyl, ready to go at any moment, jumping like a pogo stick. Life never lived up to my expectations, so I accept the patience, expect the worst, but now I'm pacing back and forth inside. I'm melting like water on wicked witches. A monster truck don't came and ran over my picket fences. I had the best of life in my clenches, but monkey wrenches was thrown like chairs kings sit on. My prayers sing too long, I fall asleep before the ending, don't even get to say amen. I hope he understand I be on bending knees. At times I think I'm crazy, then I say forget it, or maybe it's the devil infiltrating. And like Riddick Bowe, I've been fighting this since them fetus days. I'll count from 1 to 20 when I'm through, repeat the phrase. It's just a phase, it's gonna all pass, but that gets old too. I'm weakening like a deacon doing dirt, when am I supposed to? From bed knobs to broomsticks, we're looking to start some new ish. I'm writing this rhyme in faith, so when you hear it, hope you chew it. You know, you do it like swooshes, the lyrical cleansing nuisance. Wiping away your germs and filling your craniums with juices. See, mo goes on, my slick flow flows on. Straight from West Savannah, Georgia, but the swats is my home. Never go wrong, cause the click is tighter than that ass. And that bad mosquitoes, now we goes. I'm proud of you people for selling your crackin' sacks. I'm glad I'm white, not black. But ish, on the real, that's how the mites really act. When your back was turned, them slackers learned, and now we falling apart. You look at me in my eye, but you ain't feeling me in your heart. Yes, yes, law, give me the power. We live in the final hour. As I can see, they be stranded like Rapunzel in the tower. Now or never, let's stick together and overcome. But they don't feel like marching, cause they shoot just overrun. Ain't that a
So where are we now? Like, momentum has always been kind of the through line for you. There's always been, as you say, there's always been new projects, new people, new ways of connecting, new plays, new poems, new books, new concerts, new albums. Where does this find you at the moment? Do you still feel propelled in the same way that you always have been, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Like, so much. Like, I got a new record that is incoming. I don't know. Yeah. It's released in April. I think it's my best one yet. I think it's just incredible. I'm so excited for people to hear it.
Why is it your best one yet?
Because of where I'm at in my life, because of what I've learned about who I am, and because I'm trying to let go of some shame and just embrace the momentum, you know, like, and just be me and not like, you know, the thing is, I have had to split my life. I've had to be who I thought I had to be, which was Tempest out there doing the thing, and in the shadows of that success, the actual me, Kay, was left behind and I wasn't really checking for what Kay needed at all. In fact, I was just like, Kay just got dragged around by a Tempest who had to do the thing, you know.
That's a really interesting way of putting it.
That I think maybe a lot of people probably have similar experiences with their kind of, maybe their work self, the self that goes out to be social, the self that people know them to be out there. And there's this moment, I think, in probably most people's lives where you're like, hang on a minute, you know, my deeper core needs some attention here. Because for me personally, it came to a kind of crunch time. I was in some crisis, and now I'm on my way out of that. And so I feel that this album is a real part of that. It's part of my healing. It's full of love. It's an offering about resilience and acceptance. And I think it's just beautiful. There's so much love at its heart. There's people playing on the album that I've played with since I was a kid. There's people singing on the album that I've loved forever. You know, it's a really beautiful prospect to think that people are going to hear it soon.
You said shame there. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's a tough one to just kind of go into on a brief note, but yeah, I mean, when you have dysphoria, when you have gender dysphoria, then you feel a lot of shame because you're in the wrong body. You know, you can never ever put it down because you're born wrong. And you know, that right. I can only speak from my own experience, but it's been a lifetime of trying to square that with myself. So shame is, it's a familiar burden, but I'm trying to just put it down now.
And the record's really good.
Thank you.
Okay, what's the last song that we should play? What's the song that we should go out on? You've got there's still DJ SS, which I hadn't heard before till I listened to it earlier. We can finish on that. Should we finish on that?
What's the other option?
Buju Banton is the other one. Or it could be something completely different that you've just listened to this morning. We could go on out on any track you want to your show.
Oh, wow. Oh, man, that's too much. I didn't know I could just pick any song. I thought they all had to be, like, first.
Yeah, they have. But, like, this is the end of the show. We always ask everyone to choose the song that we finish on. So it can be anything you want.
Maybe we should play... No, let's just play DJ SS. Let's play The Light Off. Come on.
Why is it? Because I didn't know this song until I heard it.
Where were you, Matt? Where were you in 96?
I was not on a podium, clearly. Not on a beer crate in Brixton. I should have been. What does this song mean to you then?
It's just funny because, like, when I was young, like, my thing was jungle and drum and bass. That's the age that I am. That's what it was, just before garage. Like, we got into garage, and then, you know, that all that evolution that happened in UK music and especially like London culture. But when I was started going out raving, it was like the end of the jungle drum and bass thing that was happening, and it was just like absolute euphoria. I learned so much in that time about like the joy of music and the joy of sound systems, the joy of bass. Still to this day, when I go on tour, I'll have like in-ear monitors, but then what I need is like sub stacks. I need like two sub stacks. So if we play any festivals, you'll see, like, if they've got the kit for it, either side of the stage, left and right, I've got two huge speakers just playing bass, and that's like to my music. So it's like it can even be like quite gentle, like the last album, you know, the subs that were coming out of this like experimental poetry record, even that was like, yeah, come on, give me some more bass, like, I need to feel this. So it was just, for me, it's crucial music. It was an important time. It was powerful. I was learning a lot. It was like I was becoming politicized. I was learning. I was dancing. I was out all night, and I was learning about flow as well. I was trying to get on the mic. I was writing lyrics in double time and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, it's a kind of cheesy tune, but for anyone that knows, then, you know, this is a little doff of my cap to anyone else that remembers those glorious days, you know.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you.
Always. Thank you.
DJ SS with The Lighter, the final choice of my guest on the first time this week, K Tempest. I believe the technical term for that song is a massive banger. If you head to the BBC Sounds app now, you can listen back to previous shows from this series the first time, featuring Kelly Okereke from Block Party and Nadine Sharp. I'll be back next week with another first time guest, but until then, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.